Hello, welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good, and I'm talking to you about Hearthstone as I am driving home from work. It is Thursday, July 11th, 2019. I'll be honest, I have not been playing a whole lot on ladder this week. I've kind of decided that I'm going to take kind of a recovery month for this month, and I'm not really going to stress getting to Legend. I think the last 2 months, to be honest, have really kind of burned me out a little bit, and I don't want that to be permanent. So I'm taking a break, certainly from Standard Ladder. I've been playing some in Wild, just kind of seeing what's out there. I started out at like rank 15 because I've been kind of neglecting it. I played a little bit at the end of the last month just to try to, you know, get myself starting from not rank 20. But I was starting from rank 15, and I've been playing a few things. Team Rankstar's meta report is really, really good. Reno Jackson's the one who writes that. He does a really, really good job of detailing all the decks that are relevant in the meta. If you're thinking about playing in Wild, you should 100% check it out. I think it's probably one of the better meta reports that's out there right now. I mean, Tempo Storm does a pretty good job. Vicious Syndicate does a really good job. Well, not a really good job, but they do a decent job. There's a lot of, I know there's a lot of controversy over which meta report you use and whose data you're using. I don't care about any of that. But I trust Reno Jackson. And so I think that the work that he's doing on that meta report is really, really good. I would recommend it. And it makes it pretty easy to use also. Like, I like the format of it. But anyway, so I was trying a few things from that. I tried a Treachery Warlock, which got me to rank 10, which was pretty fun. It was like a control warlock that runs treachery, which gives a minion to your opponent, so you have Doomsayer Treachery, which is pretty good at just deleting an entire board, and also it has the added bonus of putting a Doomsayer in your opponent's pool if you're playing against something that's resurrecting minions like Big Priest. You also have Fellreaver, which is a 5-mana 8/8 that removes 3 cards from your deck. It basically burns the top 3 cards of your deck for every card your opponent plays. So you can, on 10 mana, you can play Fellreaver, Treachery, and then Glacial Shard it, and then something else for 1 mana, and that burns 6 cards off their deck, which usually at that point is the rest of their deck. Because you're getting to that pretty late in the game, and there's a lot of card draw. So usually you're just kind of burning off the rest of their deck at that point, and, you know, leaving them with an 8/8. Or sometimes you just play the 8/8 and just hit them because it's so late in the game that it doesn't matter. And you're doing the whole Void Caller, Void Lord, Sacrificial Pact thing. It just kind of control Warlock things. So that was pretty fun, but that kind of fell off hard once I got to, like, rank 8 or rank 9. I started running up against a bunch of the quest mages. I was trying Odd Mage, because Janalai is still pretty good, and then you get to run Corridor Creepers with Conjurer's Calling, which is pretty gross. But again, that seemed like a very boom or bust type of deck. Like, against a lot of, like, the even shaman types of things, it worked really well. Against anything that had a little bit more sustain, it was just hard to get enough damage to get over the top. So I've been playing the Quest Mage, which is pretty much the terror of the meta, but I wanted to see it for myself. And this is effectively Cyclone Mage with the Mage Quest. So you just run a ton of cheap spells. You run Sorcerer's Apprentices and Flame Wakers and Stargazer Luna, and then Arcane Giants, which get cheaper with every spell you play at the top end. And you basically just spam spells, you know, rush the quest, then you drop two giants, and then you can hit them for 16 plus whatever burn you've picked up along the way. And the version that I'm running also runs Archmage Vargoth, so you can, on 9 mana, you can go Archmage Vargoth and then the quest reward and get 3 turns, which, if that's not enough to kill your opponent, then you probably did something wrong along the way. It dies pretty hard to aggro, but it beats pretty much every control deck because they just can't do anything about this win condition. And it is pretty gross. Like, I probably need to get some more reps on the deck to play it consistently. But, like, the games that I've played well, they seemed like they were just completely unlosable. And so the WoW community is generally pretty upset about this deck. And I don't know if that's going to get any, you know, addressed at all, because it sounds like they're getting ready to nerf Barnes from the AMA that happened this week. But now this is the other thing, right? So the good news is that it takes some skill to, a fairly decent amount of skill, honestly, to be able to pilot this effectively, which means that at lower ranks you're not going to see it as much, or it'll be beatable. But I can see it like ranks 5 to legend, when you pretty much just have the diehard wild players, that this thing is really, really obnoxious and probably everywhere. I don't know what I'm going to do, honestly. Like, I'm just kind of taking my month off of standard and just trying out wild, because I really don't get enough time to try it. And I'm not like a, obviously, I mean, you listen to the show, you know this, I'm not a diehard wild player. But I also do enjoy going in there on occasion and you know, playing with some cards I haven't gotten to play with in a while. So we'll see. I've also been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics, and I've been getting pretty interested in like the probability and the statistics behind that. So if that is something that you're interested in, let me know. And I've been considering if I want to try to make any content around that. I don't know, but if there's interest, I might do that. And I've also been working a little bit on the specialist dashboard. I put in a new sheet last night that takes specific lineups, as in sets of 3 deck codes, and then traces the trend on them, and figures out who the first one was to win a qualifier with the deck. And that's got some pretty interesting data in it. Like, you can see, like, Language Hacker won back-to-back qualifiers because he won the last qualifier for Seoul and the first qualifier for Bucharest with the same Cyclone Mage list, or lineup, rather. And you can see kind of the popularity of that list spike. It became all immediately, like, the most popular Cyclone Mage lineup in qualifiers. And it was brought, like an order of magnitude more than any other lineup. So that's pretty cool. And I'm pretty happy with how that turned out. So you can check that out at offcurve.com/specialist-meta. And it's all the way on the right. You have to kind of, you know, go over a bunch of tabs because the thing's getting really big now. But, you know, it's interesting. And I ended up having to write some regular expressions, which I did not really want to do last night. So that was fun. But enough about that. Like, this is the time of year when we talk about card reviews of the past. And so we have approached Rise of Shadows in the rearview mirror. And as usual, there are some doozies. And there are also some cards that I got right. And you know, this is why I do this, is because, first of all, to show you that I feel like there should be some accountability. Like, I'm putting my opinions out there, and I'm admitting when I got things wrong, because I don't want it to seem like I only got things right. But I am also going to call out the ones that I got right that most people didn't, because I feel like that's important too. But I really, ultimately, this is all in service of learning how to evaluate cards better. And so I'm going to try to figure out, like, as we usually do after we finish a game that didn't go our way, I'm going to try to figure out, for the ones that I got wrong, or even the ones that I got right, what can we learn from that? What can we apply to future card reviews? So that's enough of that. Let's just go ahead and get into it. So, oh, hello, Ambulance. We'll let them go by. That's ambiance. That's what that is. So, let's just get the rose cards out of the way, because, as usual, I do not know how to evaluate rogue cards. I've been doing this for 2 years and change, and I still apparently have not figured out what makes rogue good, because I whiff on rogue cards more than, like, any other class. And I guess let's just talk about Wagglepick and get it out of the way, because I whiffed hard on that, and I thought it was useless, and I was wrong. And there's a couple of things that I really did not take into account. I knew that Raiding Party was going to be a part of the meta, but I didn't put Raiding Party and Wagglepick together. Certainly did I not put the fact that Wagglepick curves directly into, or Raiding Party curves directly into Wagglepick, and Raiding Party gets you Wagglepick. Certainly did not put those two things together. And the other thing that I didn't really think about was that Wagglepick allows you to, without any other card, as long as it's on board, go Leroy, hit face Leroy, and that's 16 damage. And that's a fairly significant amount of damage, especially when the Wagglepick is going face as well. So I should have thought about it more. I didn't really take into account the fact that, hey, this is 8 damage, and also you're going to be able to do a lot more damage with things like Life Drinker and Leroy and like everything else that goes along with that. That is just kind of the problem with not playing Rogue enough, I think. That, you know, I should have considered that that was going to be able to be a lot of face damage if that all goes face. I also got a little bit, and I think this is one of the big lessons, is I got very hung up on the, well, what happens when people run weapon removal? And I think this is a common trap that is very easy to fall into with weapons and with minions that stay on board that can be silenced, which is that you get into the, well, what happens when they blow up your weapon? And the answer is, well, a lot of times they don't. Like, a weapon removal, I mean, we were running 2 and 3 weapon removals before Waggle Pick got nerfed. And very often you just wouldn't have it. Like, you don't always have the answer because those cards are very narrow. And the fact that you're forcing your opponent to run weapon removal means that they are removing other good cards out of their deck in order to play that defensively. So even then, you're still winning because you're forcing them to remove your weapon. And even then, like, the downside wasn't that bad if you were able to keep a minion on board because you'd still get the benefit of the death rattle, which, I mean, I was hung up on. I think the other lesson from this, there's a lot of lessons from Waggle Pick. I'm not the only one who got this wrong. I think the other lesson that we take from this is don't assume that cards that were good before will continue to get played and thus negate the value of that card. I got very hung up on Hench Clan Thug is the best card in Rogue. Why would you play Waggle Pick if it's going to make you unable to play Hench Clan Thug? And what ended up happening was that this was so good that Hench Clan Thug fell out of the meta because it was better to run other cards. There were also other 3-drops that we'll talk about in a second that made it a little bit easier to not run Hench Clan Thug. But it was really the fact that Hench Clan Thug ended up being good for the meta that was in, which was a powerful meta, but Waggle Pick was better and Waggle Pick forced it out of the deck. So the trap, be wary of the trap of, well, this card is really powerful right now and you're not going to play that card with this card. Well, maybe you don't play it with that card. This is something that Luna's Pocket Galaxy, I was just having a conversation today in relation to one of the mage cards, and, well, you're not going to play that with Luna's Pocket Galaxy. Well, what if Luna's Pocket Galaxy falls out of the list? Because it might, because it's very powerful in this 4-set meta, but maybe it's not good enough in a 5-set meta. So I guess let's talk about the other rogue card that I don't even know if I would call it whiffed, but I definitely underestimated, and that's Evil Miscreant. And it's kind of easy to look at that now and be like, what the hell are you thinking? But I think that it's important to keep in mind that it was really hard to evaluate the impact of lackeys. We didn't know if you were going to be able to get enough of them. We didn't know how effective they were going to be. Because a lot of them were random effects, right? Like, you're getting Discover a Spell. You're getting, like, Witchy Lackey. You're getting Faceless Lackey. Like, a lot of them are like, well, how good is a random 2-drop? How good is evolving a minion? And, I mean, we know those things, but it's also hard to understand if you want to play a card to get 1/1s to do that. Like, it was not clear how good the lackeys were going to be, that they were as good as they are. And again, that could change. Like, they've said that they're going to add other lackeys in future sets. It's possible that they could add some dud lackeys to kind of soft nerf some of those cards. But for right now, the lackeys that we have are all really good. They're very variant, but they're very good. And, you know, this is even before we had, like, Spirit of the Shark. But even, like, Waggle Pick, you know, being able to get more of them by bouncing an Evil Miscreant. And at a 1-5, like, how hard that is to remove. Like, there's just a lot that was there. And basically what I said was, we don't know how good lackeys are going to be, but, you know, and I don't know if you're going to want a 3-mana 1-5 to get them. So, I mean, ultimately, I think that was about as close as I could have gotten with it without just, like, looking at the lackeys and knowing that they were going to be insane like they are. But, you know, I'll own that. Like, I should have probably had a better idea. Like, Sludge Slurper is probably another card that I really underestimated just because the overload seemed like a lot for a 2-1 that was just going to get you a lackey, and like, what good is one lackey? Well, you can get things that'll double your battle cries and stuff like that, and you can get those off of Underbelly Angler. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, right, that didn't really make it clear that you were going to be able to get lackeys in bulk the way that you are. Like, very often, Rogue is playing, like, 8 to 10 lackeys a game because of things like Double Miscreant, Shadow Step, and Waggle Pick, and whatever. And like, whenever you have a random effect like that, even, like, random effects like that, but, like, when you have enough of them, they tend to regress to the mean, and they tend to generally be good on average. Like, a lot of why Spirit of the Shark Rogue is so good right now, at least in Specialist, if not on Ladder, is just, like, the volume of random card generation means that you're generally going to get a couple of good ones if the game goes long enough. And, you know, against a Warrior or against a Cyclomage, the game often will go long enough. So, you know, that's kind of why we didn't understand that lackeys were good. And you know, even then, that wasn't enough to save Warlock, and it wasn't enough to save Priest. And even improve morale, right? Like, doesn't see play. Like, Warrior has access to lackeys and doesn't use them. It's really just Rogue and Shaman that are using them. So, you know, that's kind of goes along with it, too. Like, Evil Genius, like, you know, you play Evil Genius and Zoo, but Zoo's just not good. I mean, that's also, we'll get to Warlock and Priest in a bit, because a lot of the cards that I rated highly are generally just because those classes aren't good. But anyway, so it's easy to see, and even in retrospect, like, I think it was hard to see that Rogue was going, that, or that lackeys were as good as they are in certain classes, that you'd be willing to play underpowered cards, even like Evil Cable Rat, just to get them. So, I do want to talk about a couple cards that I got right before we go any further, because I need to make myself feel a little bit better, right? And Conjurer's Calling was something that I nailed. I don't think I nailed exactly that it was going to be on Giants, but I kind of had a lot of Dragon Summon Mage kind of started to figure out even before the expansion hit. And I was starting to theorycraft with Astromancer, because I was pretty sure that that was going to be part of it. And, I mean, Astromancer isn't in all the builds, but I was clearly on the right track with how you're building it. Now, I didn't catch that, you know, there's only 2 12 drops, right? And that's a big part of why Conjurer's Calling is so good right now. But even absent that, like, a lot of the Astromancer synergy and, you know, just playing some of the other big drops, or even like just like a 4 to 5 drop, just getting 2 of those and getting an evolve is pretty good. And, you know, I definitely said Astromancer in the review, and I was right on with that. And I think that the important thing that we need to keep in mind, because we've seen this a couple of times now, that generally, like, when you can get evolve effects with upside, like in this case, we're getting 2-for-1 on the evolve after destroying the creature, minion, which, like, honestly, like, if you're evolving it, you're destroying it, right? Like, it's not even that big of a downside to blow up your minion, because you trade it off and then you get a and then you basically heal it and get another one. And the fact that you can do this by manipulating the cost, I think, is really important. Like, and I guess this is a good point to talk about Power of Creation as well, because I also got Power of Creation right, and it didn't look like it at first, because I was pretty convinced that card was going to be bad, and I was right ultimately, because it's fallen out of just about every list, except in sometimes in some very greedy anti-warrior specialist side decks. But aside from that, Power Creation was originally in, like, every Dragon Summoner Mage, the ones that were running Book of Spectres, and then it dropped out, and the reason is just that a lot of times, like, 6 drops, even when you get to discover them, are bad. And especially because Mage 6 drops, like, it's Meteorologist, you're going to get offered Meteorologist a lot. And Meteorologist is a 6-mana 3/3 that doesn't get an effect off its battle cry when you summon it from Power of Creation. So, like, a fixed cost, like, you have to look at that cost and see what the minions look like. And in that case, I looked at it, and I'm like, yes, there are some high rolls, but there are also a lot of really low rolls. And sometimes you're just getting, like, a vanilla 4/5 or a vanilla 5/5, which is not terrible. Like, Toki's the other 6-drop. And there might be another one that I'm not thinking about. but I know that Toki and Meteorologist are two of them. And so Toki's a 6-mana 5/5. And, you know, 2 5/5s for 8 mana is not the worst, but it's not what you're looking for out of that card. Meanwhile, stuff like Astromancer, stuff like Conjurer's Calling, when you can hit a specific cost that has a very high value pool, which you can do with Astromancer hitting an 8-drop or a 9-drop, you can do that with Conjurer's Calling hitting a Mountain Giant, or even like running something like Alexstrasza. 9-drops are generally pretty good, so are 8-drops if you're running Astromancer and you get an 8-drop out of it. Like, when you can, and we learned this all the way back with Spiteful Summoner, but, you know, we kind of forgot that lesson. When you can get random minions to spawn of a specific cost, especially when you're getting more than one, or you're getting it along with another body, like, if you're just getting a random minion, like, one random minion of a particular cost, that's not great. If you're getting two bodies, and at least one of them is a random minion, and you can control the cost, that is generally worth putting in your deck. But if it's a fixed cost, look at the minions that are in that pool. Because very often, if it's a fixed cost, they probably pick that cost for a reason, and it's probably fair. And fair cards very often do not see play in Constructed. I mean, while we're on the topic of mage cards, like, there were a number of cards. I know I spoke to Andrew before I recorded this, and he wanted me to talk about Magic Trick and Mana Cyclone. And I think that I was pretty much in the middle of the road, because a lot of what I said with those cards was, I think these are probably good in some sort of a Miracle Mage type of build, but I don't know what the end is. What the win condition for that is, so it's hard for me to get too excited about them. And it turns out the win condition is the card that I was right about, which is Conjurer's Calling. But that was kind of hard to see. But I mean, because it looked like the only way that you were going to get those to work was going to be in something that looked like a Flamewaker build without a Flamewaker that goes face. And it was hard to see, like, if you're generating all these spells, like, what's your game plan? Because even in, like, Cyclone Mage, if you're just getting a whole bunch of spells, that's not enough without, like, getting some of the minions that go along with it. The card that I whiffed on really hard was Ray of Frost. And again, I said in that review as well, that looks like if a Miracle Mage is viable, then this will be part of it, but I just don't see why you would want to freeze two things. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Because, like, freezing two things is good. Like, I think I got hung up on the fact that it was just, like, another freeze card. And we've seen a bunch of those. Like, we've seen Snap Freeze. We've seen Freezing Potion. We've seen, oh gosh, what else? Like, even Frost Nova to some extent. I think I underestimated, like, how powerful Twin Spell across the board is as well. Like, the fact that you're getting card advantage by getting two copies of this card for one card is actually really significant, and something that was hard to see how good Twin Spell was before the expansion drop, because most of the Twin Spell cards are seeing some play aside from, like, Rapid Fire. But I mean, both the Druid ones are, both the Mage ones are, Unleash the Beast is, and even, like, the secret one for Paladin and the lifesteal one for Paladin see play in niche situations. So, like, Twin Spell as a whole, I think we have to, if they do print any more Twin Spell cards, we really have to look at those very carefully, because even, like, a modest effect on a Twin Spell card, just getting to do that twice, is actually way more powerful than it seems. So, like, I looked at Ray of Frost, and we've had cards like Freezing Potion. Like, Freezing Potion was a 0-mana card that freezes a minion. I didn't do the damage thing. The damage thing is actually really relevant and makes it very flexible, because you can turn it into, like, effectively whatever the elemental card was that did 2 damage. You know, you can turn it into that, or you can freeze 2 minions. It's actually really flexible the way that it's built. But it was hard to see that without knowing how good Twin Spell was going to be. And, you know, now that we know that, we can evaluate Twin Spell. You know, we pretty much have to have a good reason to not like a Twin Spell card. Like, even Rapid Fire, I can see being relevant at some point with enough support. It's just That card is just a little bit too underwhelming without some sort of spell damage buff. But literally every other one is seeing play in some sort of a deck, and we have to account for that going forward. So let's talk about a couple of the Shaman cards. And one of them I was really right about him when I think I caught myself at the end with Walking Fountain. I was about to go in an embarrassing direction on Walking Fountain. And I think during the review, because I originally rated it a 2, and I think as I was reading the card again during the review, it kind of hit me that it was not that much different than, like, Ultimate Infestation when you start looking at it, because it was basically 8 mana, deal 8 damage, gain 8 life, and get a 4 attack minion with Wind Fury left over with some amount of health. And once I started reading it like that, even without, like, Eureka and nonsense like that, it kind of struck me, like, how much healing and how much damage and how relevant of a body that is if it gets to go face the next turn. Yes, it's expensive, but it's doing so many things for you in one. Like, it's developing and removal and healing all at the same time, and I think I got hung up on the fact that it was an 8 drop, but that's a reasonable 8 drop, all things considered. I actually rated Hagatha's Scheme a little bit lower than I would have expected when I was looking back at it. And I actually was pretty right on, because what I said about Hagatha's Scheme is that it's amazing if you get it in your opening hand, but it is going to have a cost to having it in your opening hand, being that you're going to have a dead card for 4 turns, and also that when you top deck it, it's going to be bad. And you've actually been seeing, outside of, like, real, like, true control Shaman, like, a lot of these mid-range hybrids just are not running Hagatha's Scheme, because there is a big cost to that, because it is blowing up your board, and it also is very bad if you top deck it late, you know, or you get it, you know, generated off an effect or whatever. It can be very bad. And so I think that this kind of goes for all of the Scheme cards, and I think I was right on with that. Because really, all of the Scheme cards, from one way or another, except for maybe, like, Forbidden Scheme, or Lazul Scheme, whatever, the one that makes the minion have less attack, just because that doesn't usually have to scale that high. But, like, I mean, Dr. Boo Scheme is just hot garbage to begin with. But, like, Togwaggle Scheme and Rafam Scheme and Hagatha Scheme, like, they just, you have to have them early, but you can't play them early. And there's a cost to that in terms of how you're mulliganing and what options you have available to you. So Hagatha's Scheme has been starting to fall out of a lot of lists, except for the really true, like, Elysiana Shudderwatt control lists. And I think it'll still see play. I rated it a 3. I think it's a fine card. But it's clear. I also said it wasn't as, you know, as broken as everybody seemed to think it was. And I think I was pretty right on that. So another couple of cards that I was really big on that ended up not seeing play are Fellor Betrug for Warlock and Madame Lazul for Priest. And I think that this is one of those things where I don't think that has anything to do with the cards necessarily. I think it has to do with the fact the classes aren't good and they don't have enough support for the kinds of decks that those cards would go in. Fellor Betrug being, like, a plot twist control Warlock and Madame Lazul being a Priest deck. But I still don't know if Lazul will see play outside of a 4-set meta. Like, she might if I don't know if you're gonna have room for that in a 5 or a 6-set meta deck, but she could. And I would not be surprised if Betrug starts seeing play with the new quest that's been introduced for Warlock. I think that could be. I don't know if Betrug is going to be good enough, because he is very awkward to pull off. But I do think that if he's going to be viable, it's going to be in the next set or two, once we have a quest that we can start using and taking advantage of. Because especially, like, once you have the quest off, like, draw a card, get a zero-cost copy, get a rush version of it on the board is pretty good. So, you know, I could see that happening, but I could also just see him not being good enough. I think that I kind of got a bit starry-eyed by the whole Betrug, Hakar, Rafam, you know, go buy a lottery ticket because you need to use up all your luck while you still have it type of scenario. And that clearly didn't come to pass. I guess we should probably talk about plot twist too. And it's, again, it's part of the same. I was also very high on that, and I continue to be high on that, because just because I think that, you know, Control Warlock just does not have enough tools right now. The problem isn't with any of the cards that were introduced for Warlock in particular, or Priest for that matter either. It's just that, like, Control, like, slow Warlocks, or any sort of Priest, especially after the Hall of Fame Mind Blast, like, they don't have a clear way to win the game. They have a lot of tools to just not lose the game, but they don't really have a good way to win the game. So I think that's really where, and that was the case for Warlock before in Knights of the Frozen Throne too, because they got things like Defile, but Defile was great, and even Blood Reaver Gul'dan was really good, but Blood Reaver Gul'dan, believe it or not, was not enough before we started getting Carnivorous Cube and, you know, some of the other tools that we got in Kobolds and Catacombs. So ultimately those cards just need more support, and they may still see play. I'm almost guaranteed that Plot Twist is going to get better with this quest. We'll see about the other two. And I guess the last one that I'll talk about is Dreamway Guardians, which I also was very down on. And I think that the problem was that, I mean, first of all, the problem was that this is the lesson for this card is this is why Andrew and I wait until the entire set's been released. And I may have rated this differently when we were actually doing the review. I don't remember. But Dreamway Guardians is a card that I rated very low because Blessing of the Ancients was one of the last cards revealed. And that was what really brought Token Druid together. Like, there were a lot of Token Druid-y type cards. But up until the very end of the reveals, we didn't see, like, a Twin Spell buff. And that's really what brought that deck together. So I think that final lesson is just kind of a reminder, and that's why we do the reviews the way that we do. Is that we want to make sure that we're getting full context. So I don't even remember what I said on the episode. I just remember going through the spreadsheet that we fill out and looking at my rating for it, and I clearly did not revise it if I did revise it for the show. But that's just the lesson from that card, is make sure that you are, before you, don't write off a card based on your initial impressions. Make sure that you're going back and looking at all of the cards, you know, with full knowledge of what's being released at once, and then let that kind of guide how you deck build if you're going to be deck building early in an expansion. All right, so I think that's enough self-flagellation for one day. You know, if you do enjoy this kind of analysis of cards, I'll remind you, if you're a new listener, that I do the card review on the Happy Hearthstone, where Andrew and I sit for 2-3 hour sessions, 3 hour plus sessions, and go through all of the cards in detail, one by one, and no card is left behind or forgotten. So if you want this kind of detailed analysis, you can make sure to go follow over there. Usually we will record part one and in time to release for the day of the set release, and then part two is usually a week later. So, you know, do make sure to go follow for that. If you're a patron of the Happy Hearthstone, you also get access to the spreadsheet that we're filling out as we fill it out. And we may have some exciting things in store. We're talking about some things that may or may not happen, so I won't talk about them yet, but things may be happening. We'll just say that. Otherwise, you can find everything I'm doing at offcurve.com, twitch.offcurve, discord.offcurve. You can find the Twitter account is at offcurve. If you just want show announcements, if you want to follow me, I am at Wicked Good for everything in addition to show announcements. And, you know, please do leave a review on iTunes. Haven't gotten one of those in a while, but they do super help with visibility and, you know, just warming the cockles of my heart. And you can also, if you're interested in supporting the show directly with monies, you can also do that too. Ooh, geez, I just pulled into the garage and accidentally clipped the side view mirror, so that's fun. Okay. Anyway, yay. Driving while podcasting, that's the adventure, folks. Anyway, as I was saying, so you can support with monies. There's a link in the show notes as well. So thank you, as always, for listening. I know you have plenty of options for where you can put your listening time, and I appreciate you spending it with me on my drive home into my garage door, apparently. But so, you know, enjoy reveal season, which should be starting in earnest very soon. And until we talk next, be good to each other. We'll talk soon. Have a good one.